There is the proper time to disagree, and there's the proper time not to disagree.
Today on Insight for Living.
When husbands come in from work, battle fatigue has set in over the day. That's not a good time. Wives facing a mounding stack of dishes, that's not a good time to take her on. Fellas, that's not the best time. And wise are the husbands and wives that know the timing.
No matter how long you've been married, no matter how healthy your relationship, there are times when conflict arises. Sometimes it's the result of fatigue. Sometimes it's a differing view on how to discipline the kids. And sometimes it's a discussion of how to manage the family budget. Well, today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll present another practical message from the classic series on marriage called Strike the Original Match. When the gloves come off and the verbal sparring is about to begin, it's important to take a deep breath and remember what Chuck Swindoll calls how to have a good fight.
When I visited Pittsburgh years ago, I stayed in a hotel that overlooked the two rivers, the Allegheny and the Monongahela River. Both flowed together and began the Ohio River, right at the point of Pittsburgh. If you've been there, you know that. And there's a current factor that's very strong from two massive rivers becoming one large one. That's exactly the way it is in a marriage. So how do you, with a strong, independent will, living with another person just like that, flow together in the current and still stay together in harmony? Ephesians chapter 4 will be our guide, verses 25 through 32, as we lay some rules down. There are seven of them I want to present tonight on how to have a good fight. These are rules to fight by, if you please. And they, if you will employ them, will allow you to carry on normal, natural, disagreeable times without breaking with Scripture. Let me read through these verses. Verse 25 of chapter 4. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you, with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. Let him who steals steal no longer, but rather let him labor, performing with his own hands what is good, in order that he may have something to share with him who has need. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has also forgiven you. Verse 25 introduces rule number one. Be committed to honesty and mutual respect. That's basic rule for all fights. Be committed to honesty and a mutual respect. Look at the verse. Therefore, literally it should read, having laid aside once for all falsehood, talk truth. If you were to read it as Paul wrote it, that's the way it would read. There's a particular tense that is used in the New Testament language that conveys the idea of something being done in a point of time. There is another tense altogether different from that one that conveys the idea of continued action going on day after day. This particular verb, laying aside, is the former rather than the latter. And when it appears in the sentence with a main verb, it always precedes the action of the main verb. In other words, the laying aside is to be done once for all in a point of time and ahead of the fact that you will now talk the truth. That's why I rendered it, therefore, having once for all laid aside lying, talk truthfully. I'm calling this a commitment because of the thought of once for all here. This isn't something that you do day after day after day. It is something that you commit yourself to as a married partner. Some of you have never made that commitment. We refer at times to a commitment to Christ. I want to talk tonight about a commitment to a married partner. You vowed at the altar certain things, but have you ever committed yourself verbally and honestly in your soul to being honest with your partner and viewing your partner with respect? I get the respect part from the last part of the verse. Speak the truth, each one of you, with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. You're not just marrying a man or a woman. You are not only marrying a husband or a wife. You are marrying another member of the family of God. And so it stands to reason that as you would hold in high respect someone in that pew where you're sitting, that you would do the same with your married partner. And that's why I'm suggesting that there be a commitment of this kind. Let's go to the second rule. After being committed to honesty and a mutual respect, the second rule is, make sure your weapons are not deadly. That's in verse 26. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Maybe you've never seen this verse as to what it's really saying. This is commonly called by the scholars a permissive imperative. That means God is not commanding you, blow your stack. God is permitting you to be angry on certain occasions, but he's warning you, don't let it lead to sin. And you know as well as I that sin leads to death-like existence. That's why I'm saying the matter of deadly weapons. Be sure that you do not have in your mind or in your hands deadly weapons when the fight begins. Now, if I read this verse correctly, I do find a green light for getting angry. He says, I permit you to be angry. But I say to you with the same stroke of the pen before the ink is dry, don't let that anger lead to sin. All of us know in our own conscience when the anger has become sin. I don't have to spell that out for you. Bursts of temper are sinful. Anger that leads to rage and being out of control is sinful anger. Anger that plans to hurt another member of the family or another individual is a sinful anger. You know the point where your anger becomes sin. That's the point that he has in mind. Hold your place and look at Proverbs for a minute. Chapter 18, verse 14. I'll show you a specific reason why it's terribly important not to have deadly weapons and not to employ deadly words. Proverbs 18, 14 says, the spirit of a man can endure his sickness, but a broken spirit, who can bear? We give you time to find the verse. 18:14. It's the last part of this contrastive proverb I want you to remember. A man who becomes sick, a woman who becomes ill, you can endure that. But there's something that you cannot endure, and that is a broken spirit. This is called a crushed spirit in other places of Proverbs. The crushing of the spirit of a child is different than the breaking of the child's self-will. You don't want to do the crushing, but you do want to do the breaking. The same is true in a marriage relationship. Look down at verse 19 and you'll see why it's important. A brother offended, a wife offended, a husband offended is harder to be won than a strong city. And contentions are like the bars of a castle. Have you ever been wounded or crushed by your mate? I'm sure that we all have at times. Angry words said in the spur of a moment are like deadly weapons. Let me give you some examples. For example, when we attack the person rather than the problem, we move into deadly areas. When we make things personal rather than dealing with the wrong situation, we're treading on thin ice. When we reject rather than reprove, and I'll spell that out for you. I know a man who said to me some time ago, someone in his family said, "I never did have much use for you after all." He'll never forget it till the day of his death. Never. That was a deadly weapon used by an individual. Or, "No wonder you got a brother in the mental hospital." That's a deadly weapon used that attacks and assaults an individual. Or, "I can't stand the way you look." Or, "Those freckles, they're terrible." What can a person do about freckles, you know? Really? Or, "Let's face it, you're ugly. You're just plain ugly." Now, you laugh and I laugh. It's an extreme exaggeration, but in a moment of anger, you say that kind of thing, and it's deadly. Your mate may say, "Look, I forgive you, honey. That's all right. I understand." But down deep inside, that will never fully be forgotten. It's crushing. It breaks that inner spirit that is so much a part of a marriage. Make sure your weapons don't lead to sin. And another area would be gross exaggeration. Try to remember, if you can, to remove the words "always" and "never" from your fights. Okay? They have no place because they are not true. No one always does something, and it's not true that someone never does something. So let's take away the gross exaggerations. Be sure your weapons aren't deadly when you fight. Third, agree together that the time is right. Now that you've established by a commitment honesty and mutual respect, and you've checked the weapons and discovered they're not deadly, that is, you're under control, third, you need to agree that the time is right. Look at the verse 26. "Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity." That's very wise counsel. Paul is not only being specific about not letting anger build up day after day, night after night, but he is implying here the wise use of time. He is suggesting that there is a time in which arguments are to take place. There is the proper time to disagree, and there's a proper time not to disagree. Perhaps the most important word in that rule I gave you is the word "together." Be sure that both of you sense this is the right time to talk. When husbands come in from work, battle fatigue has set in over the day. That's not a good time. Wives facing a mounding stack of dishes, that's not a good time to take her on. Fellas, that's not the best time. There are certain times and periods in our lives when we're not given to talking in depth about serious and disagreeable things, and wise are the husbands and wives that know the timing. And if you have that first rule down, you will be honest enough to say, "Honey, this isn't the best time." Or, "Let's talk a little later when the children are down." Or, "This isn't the right place to do it. Let's deal with it a little later." And when you say that, keep your appointment. Don't put it off. I have found, one more thought on this, that people have battle flags that they wave. And this is the way you will know, as a married partner, that your husband or wife is in need of talking. Every wife here, every husband here, has lived together very long, can tell you some of the battle flags. I'll share with you some that I've observed in other marriages. When my husband gets really quiet, that's a flag. We need to talk. When Dolly talks really fast on the telephone to me and hangs up before I'm through, that's a sign. When he swears in traffic, when he can't handle the irritations of traffic, I know that's something's building up. This is a sure flag. When he doesn't eat, something's wrong. When she bites her nails, I know something's going on. Those little underneath, beneath the surface, identifying marks that tell you you need to talk. Don't let that pass. Bring it up. Let's talk right now. Or as soon as we can when the time is right. So plan your timing together. Rule number four. This is one of my favorites. Be ready with a positive solution right after taking a swing. Be ready with a positive solution soon after you've taken a swing. Swings obviously are negative. And let me show you why I come to that conclusion. Verse 28. I love the way the scriptures tell us how to live. So practical. Paul is dealing here with a case of stealing. Admittedly, it doesn't relate to a marriage, but let's apply it to a marriage. He makes his statement and he takes a swing at it. Let him who steals, steal no longer. There's no doubt about it where he stands. I don't want that to go on any longer. It's wrong before God. There's no way you can rectify it. Don't steal. But he comes right back with a solution. Rather, he says, let him labor, performing with his own hands what is good, in order that he may have something to share with him who has need. He comes right back, having swung at the problem of stealing, with an answer. He says, now, I'm not just going to leave you dangling, telling you that are thieves not to steal. That doesn't do any good. I'm going to tell you how you can help it. We had a deacon in a former church that used to say, I won't listen to any criticism in this church if a person doesn't have, along with the criticism, an answer to the problem. Remarkable to me how everybody said this is wrong and many people said that's wrong, but who has a better plan? Now, when you come to your mate and you have a justified criticism and you're talking it out, fighting it out, as it were, be quick with a solution. Now, I'll be very frank with you. This is where I've been weak often in our marriage. My wife been with the kids for 12, 14 hours during the day, and I walk in and I say, you're very irritated, aren't you? Well, that's really a wonderful way to begin an evening with your wife. Or, don't get discouraged. You'll be through with the dishes by 11 o'clock. And then suddenly I began to realize that that doesn't do anything but drive the hurt deeper. How much better to say, let me work with you in this. Or, honey, I've discovered that when I get irritated with them, this helps. And coming right back with a solution helps support the person who is already demoralized in his spirit. Paul is telling the person who is the thief he's wrong to steal, but he doesn't just lock him up behind bars. He's, let me tell you what to do about it. Go to work. And work in such a way that you learn the joy of giving, and then you'll learn no longer to steal. In other words, what I'm saying is condemning without correcting crushes. Don't forget that. Condemning your mate in the middle of a fight without offering the solution for correction will only crush the mate. It won't help them. And it'll often make them worse. Now, rule number five. Watch your words and guard your tone. It's so clear from verse 29. Watch your words and guard your tone. I think of all of them so far, this will be the most difficult to implement. Because when we have a point and we feel very intense about it, we tend to get louder. But the remarkable thing is, when we get softer, we say more. The louder the tone, the less the mate will listen. And the uglier the words, the less you communicate. He says in verse 29, this is one of my favorite verses. People at times ask me, what are some of your favorite verses in the Bible? Ephesians 4:29 would be one of my answers. Let no unwholesome word, forgive me for this crude interpretation, but it means rotten or putrid. It certainly would include profanity, searing, bitter words. Let no putrid word proceed from your mouth. And look at how gracious Paul is. He doesn't just attack. He says, here's the other side. Let it be such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. You know, you can develop and cultivate such an honest and mutually respected relationship with your mate that both of you can live in a teachable fashion with each other. But the bond is tactfulness. Being tactful. Sven Warlus has written a book entitled Family Communication. Got one of the finest pieces on tact I've ever read. Just a small part of it says this. Tactfulness is an approach to another human being which involves being sincere and open in communication, while at the same time showing respect for the other person's feelings and taking care not to hurt him unnecessarily. Did you hear that? Taking care not to hurt him or her unnecessarily. It involves a trust or a faith in the other person, and it communicates this, quote, I trust you. I trust you will be able to handle what I'm going to tell you. I respect your feelings, and I will do my best to guard against my own destructive tendencies so that I don't hurt you unnecessarily. Oh, that is profound. I trust you, and I trust as I share these words, I won't hurt you unnecessarily. And unless it's a very unusual situation, or your wife or husband is a very unusual person, that will absolutely disarm you if it's said in sincerity.
Another practical approach to handling conflict in the home. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, How to Have a Good Fight. Today's sermon comes from the series on marriage called Strike the Original Match. This collection of 14 CDs has been designated by Insight for Living as a classic series. And that means all the CDs are digitally remastered, packaged in a sturdy slipcover case, and the series includes a bonus interview with Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll. Before a live audience, they share candid insights on marriage and some of the lessons they've learned about keeping their marriage strong for more than 50 years. And that's not all. The series comes packaged with a brand new Bible Companion workbook as well. So give us a call for the series, Strike the Original Match, at 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. Chuck?
All of us live in a dispensable age, don't we? Nothing's really intended to last very long. Like a light bulb, when it grows dim or flickers out, you just spin it out of the socket, find a new one, and screw it in. Well, what's true for light bulbs does not work for relationships, for partnerships, for marriage. A marriage that endures requires two people fully committed long-term to each other. It takes the C word. You've heard me use the C word over and over again in this series because it's a biblical virtue. It stands for commitment. You see, commitment forms the foundation upon which a healthy marriage rests. And let me add, if you're among those who financially sustain Insight for Living, please know this. We remain profoundly grateful to you. But maybe you're hearing my words today, feeling that little check in your spirit. You've been a loyal listener, but you've been a silent supporter. Today is the day we need to hear from you. Whether you decide to become a monthly companion or just give a one-time donation, believe me, we'll be grateful. A good partnership like this takes two. It takes the C word. As we remain committed to providing these daily programs, we urge you to respond in kind. Thanks so much for your commitment.
And here's how you can respond to Chuck Swindoll's request. Become a monthly companion right now by calling 1-800-772-8888. You can also become a monthly companion online at insight.org/monthly companion. A monthly companion agrees to give an automated donation every month. It's simple. It doesn't take long to sign up. But the impact has eternal implications. So call us at 1-800-772-8888. Or go online to insight.org/monthly companion. I'm Dave Spiker. Chuck Swindoll's message, How to Have a Good Fight, concludes next time on Insight for Living.